So we come today to help the suffering. And right away I thought, who are the suffering? Because it's really a fundamental truth taught to us in many religious traditions, notably Buddhism, that we all suffer. It's something we all know if we have lived more than, well, we're aware of it if we've lived more than a few years, and we can observe it in even the newborn. We all suffer. We long for things we cannot have. We are unfulfilled in our desires. We're torn by anger and even hatred at times. Suffering is a part of life, obviously to very different degrees. And I think that's a good thing to think about when we think about help the suffering, because it's easy, especially for people who are generally fairly fortunate, to frame help the suffering as something that I do for other people. For people in particularly dire straits, such as somebody who's just suffered a great loss, or they're very ill, that of course could be anybody, or also people who are struck by the misfortunes that tend not to occur as much in a wealthy and privileged community, although no one is safe. We certainly are acutely aware of a lot of the suffering that's going on right now as we bring our own worries about our country and the reverberations to the world into this space and into our community and our friendships here. This is why on Tuesday, and this was spurred by a member of the congregation who said, "This is what I'm really needing." And I thought, oh yes, this is what so many of us are needing. This Tuesday, in our Dismantling White Supremacy space and time at 7:15 p.m., it'll be a time for people to just bring all their overwhelm and confusion and wanting to sort things out about, but really, how do I cope? Because we're all suffering. And what do I do to mitigate others' suffering as I see things falling apart? So please join me there for what will be a carefully facilitated conversation, because we all can get very stuck in that place of just venting and ranting with people who feel the same way, but then we all leave not feeling like, but now what? You know, we haven't gotten any farther. So we'll try to have a, but now what? Some of the suffering that people have been bringing to me is about people, either they themselves or people they know, who are federal workers who are extremely uncertain about their jobs or who have already gotten layoff notices, ranging from the Office of Personnel Management to the Veterans Administration. People are concerned about the suffering that has already begun around the world as USAID funds have just disappeared. One of the ways that we often very constructively use our influence around the world, and people who have depended on those programs who suddenly now have nothing. People are concerned about those who depend on Medicaid, whose funding is frozen, and then it's not frozen, and is it happening, and will these payments be made? People who are waiting for the newest cancer trial, who see there's no reporting and that grants have frozen, and is this research even going to be completed? Some of that's in here, a lot of it's out there. And again, for that sense of help the suffering as if it's a class of people out there and a different kind. Well, of course we have remedies for that in our culture. We have the saying that it's more blessed to give than to receive, trying to assert that one cannot give help without being showered by blessings oneself with that very action. But do we really believe it? Or is it an aspiration? It's okay if it's just an aspiration. It's a lot to take in. These assertions, such as in our reading, that we are essentially one. Not only that everyone suffers, obviously to different degrees, in different ways, at different moments, but that our fates are inextricable. It's aspirational because we can't all have the experiences like of Guru Nanak, who so inspires Valerie Kaur in her Sikh faith. This is where she got the phrase that is so important to her and in her teaching, see no stranger. Guru Nanak lived many, many years ago. He was the first of the 10 Sikh gurus who guide that faith. And he, just like us, was a little overwhelmed by the world, by conflict among people of different faiths, between rich and poor, between people with different backgrounds, neighbors, family members fighting. He went into a retreat. For 3 days, he went away from everyone else, just to be with himself, his meditations. And when he emerged after 3 sunrises and sunsets, he saw all the people he had been concerned about, but they looked so different than he had ever seen them before. He looked around him at people he knew and people he did not know and said, "I see no stranger." He had had this amazing realization that we are all one, that humans are humans through other humans, as his faraway neighbors in southern Africa would say it. It shows up in so many places. Here's a much more contemporary example. Shug Avery has a similar realization to Guru Nanak in the novel The Color Purple by Alice Walker. She relates, "One day when I was sitting quiet and feeling like a motherless child, which I was, it come to me. That feeling of being part of everything, not separate at all. I knew that if I cut a tree, my arm would bleed." And here's another thing. When we think about helping the suffering, and it somebody out there, not us at this moment, it can feel so overwhelming. It can feel like a terrible burden. It carries guilt and a sense of being overwhelmed. I just can't do all this. And not that those feelings all vanish and are never a part of it, but listen to how Shug feels when she realizes that what happens even to a tree affects her. "I laughed and I cried and I run all around the house." She experiences the same joy that Valerie Kaur speaks of. That she can't realize that she is all of a part with everything else, including their suffering, without being filled with joy. What is this about? Something amazing, and again, those of us who, and I look at myself, who have not had this kind of mystical experience may have to take it on faith. But the faith of trusting in so many people who express this kind of oneness. That there is a great joy to be tapped when we get beyond me and you, us and them. Now, where this gets particularly challenging, as I said, is that the suffering also include people who are inflicting the suffering that I just listed. We can be intent on stopping them without seeing them as other. We can see our essential oneness with people, our opponents, people who are causing real harm. We can see that we are not separate from them either, without letting them continue to do harm. I just say that even though I say I'm not going to speak primarily about loving our opponents today, because it's a whole other level of difficult. But it's important to keep in mind. So for example, next week after the service, we'll be able to make signs and everybody's invited to come to a protest outside the Tesla dealership on El Camino as a way of saying, that's from 1 to 3 next Sunday, the 16th. It's a way of saying, we see the harm you're doing. It is not okay. We're going to keep raising our voices. We are not going to let you dismantle all of these programs and all of this government that we have established to help one another, willy-nilly. I want to keep in mind and keep in my own heart as we do. You know, Elon Musk is also one of the suffering, because we all are. It's a very difficult balance to hold. You know, I think it's good to turn to these other traditions sometimes because it's not so deeply established in Western religion, this idea of oneness. Jesus in the canonical Gospels describes even neighbors as others, although he brings us so close to this realization. Everyone who is an other, a neighbor, is worthy of our love. You know, their positions may seem very different from ours, but that does not separate us from our obligation to them or our being their neighbor and their being ours. And we are to love our neighbors as ourselves. A deep equality, not quite an identity, but moving toward that interwovenness of which the ancient teaching of Southern Africa teaches, Ubuntu. There simply is no being human apart from our connection with other humans. But you know, the Christian mystics take it all the way. A recognition like Guru Nanak had, like Shug Avery had, and so her creator, Alice Walker, must have intimated in some way that the suffering is all of us. That when we see no stranger, there is not a I help you or you help me. Thomas Merton, 20th century mystic, I don't know if he would have accepted that label, but judge for yourself when you hear this story he tells in his book, Conjectures of a Guilty Bystander. Please note, conjectures, not confessions. He may be a guilty bystander, but he's not wallowing in guilt, and here is why. He had this experience right there at home in Louisville. At the corner of 4th and Walnut, in the center of the shopping district, I was suddenly overwhelmed with the realization that I loved all these people, that they were mine, and I theirs, that we could not be alien to one another, even though we were total strangers. It was like waking from a dream of separateness, of spurious self-isolation in a special world. And again, he writes, this sense of liberation from an illusory difference was such a relief and such a joy to me that I almost laughed out loud. I want to take just a moment. This is a practice that deserves repetition and much more time, but I've experienced for myself that even a minute of it is powerful. This comes from Valerie Kaur and her phrasing of Guru Nanak's realization, so similar to Thomas Merton's, although they use some different words, that there are no strangers. She phrases it again and again, "You are part of me I do not yet know." So I want us to do an exercise right now, and if closing your eyes helps, do that. Just to think of someone, a specific someone, someone whose face you can call up before you, whom you don't know very well. Again, not somebody who brings up feelings in you of anger or conflict or hatred, just somebody you don't know very well. And imagine yourself, hear the words out loud in your mind. Imagine yourself saying, "You are a part of me I do not yet know." See if you can hold that face, that person's being before you, and those words, and just see what it, just repeat those words and think about what it means to say, to believe, "You are a part of me I do not yet know." Let's just spend a minute there. If something shifted for you in that time, well, that would be a wonderful thing to share about over our lunch together after the service. Kaur suggests doing this even with anything, anything at all in the world, not only a human. Shug Avery did it with a tree, a house plant, a pet, a building. Anything that we seem not to know. So much power in those words, "a part of me," and maybe the most powerful word in that sentence, "yet." When we imagine ourselves into that realization, that there is no stranger, that everyone and everything is a part of us and we a part of them, then helping the suffering is no longer an act of charity or kindness. Or perhaps it's better to say that acts of charity and kindness are now, they're like why you put an antibiotic and Band-Aid on your finger when it's bleeding. Because your right hand doesn't think, "Oh, that's not me. That's the left hand." Oh, I'll be charitable and wrap it up. It's just natural. It's inescapable. And it's unavoidable to realize that the help never runs one way. It runs all the ways. Among others and ourselves and opponents, everyone and everything. Let us go forth in the joy of that possibility.